Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Richard Mills, chairman of the Asia CEO Events, plus host of the annual Asia CEO Awards. Richard is a powerhouse in executive search and leadership, instrumental in advancing the Philippines as a key business destination. Richard brings over two decades of experience and a background as a chartered financial analyst and Microsoft certified systems engineer from the University of Waterloo. Richard has hosted the Grand Asia CEO Forum and Asia CEO Awards for 20 years now, contributing significantly to and helping highlight business developments across Southeast Asia. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and discuss leadership, innovation, and becoming one of the top business figures in the Asia Pacific region. So, Richard, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for the dramatic introduction.
Yeah, pleasure to have you here. Richard, thank you for joining us again today. Now, I always like to ask, before we hop in to the Asia CEO Forum and what you've done in your career, I always like to ask, how did you even get started in business? Is this something that your parents did? Is this, or do you come from a long line of entrepreneurs?
No, the opposite. I understand it. How I got into business was getting fired. So I was working for a grumpy American fellow, and I maybe a bit grumpy back, or a bit maybe too mouthy sometimes too. And so one day he fired me, and I said, "Oh my God, I got two little kids at the time, and it was a pretty rough stage." So I said, maybe what I can do is start my own business doing the same thing. I don't know how much detail you want, Daryl, but I had signed a non-compete agreement and some other things. So that was a bit of a desperate thing. But anyway, best thing I ever did was start a business on my own. It was scary and frightening, but it really changed my life, was running my own business for sure.
And how, I love talking about this because a lot of people, they're going through their own challenges, a lot of people, especially post-pandemic. So what, you just hung up a shingle and went at it? Did you, like, it just, was it smooth sailing? You said it was the best decision. So you just hung up your shingle and money was started being thrown at you, and it was...
No, it never works like that. You need, what I tell people is you need at least 6 months of living expenses to start a business. And it's usually more like 8 or 9 months, because it takes time for agreements to be signed, for the work to be done, an invoice is sent. There's often 30 days before you get, and it takes a while. There's many people who would like to do business, but you're new in your thing, and they don't know whether you're going to survive. And if they say yes to work with you, then as much as they do, they can get into trouble if it doesn't go well. So they have to hold back. But if you can survive, in particular that first year, then you're over that initial hump. And as long as you keep working, you can make a go of it.
What were some of your biggest challenges? And you're pretty well established now. I'm sure obviously you have your own, nothing's ever flawless, but in looking back, what were some of the biggest things you had to overcome?
It's the cash flow side, because you have monthly expenses and the money's not coming in when you first start your business. Money is going out from there as well. So you really have to have your partner, special partner, in my case, my sweet wife, who was on board 100%. And she knew that expenses, costs were going to have to come way down, because we were going to have to survive this drought period. So that's key. If you don't have a partner who's on board and who says, but I don't want to live like that, and why, what happens if the business doesn't work out, and all these reasonable concerns, but it's going to be very difficult. So you need to prepare them for what is coming and get them on board. If they're not on board, it's going to be very difficult.
That's a big tip. That's a really big tip. So if somebody has a partner and their partner is on board, but they're starting out and struggling, I feel like you've already given some tidbits there indirectly, but to really hit the nail on the head, what would you recommend if someone was starting out and struggling?
Sell, or ABC is always be closing. Get in front of clients. There's so often people come from a corporate world, and you see this a lot, they know business, that they know what to do, but they're weak on, because they've worked in a protected corporate environment, they don't know the real street of what it's like to run a business. And you need to be doing 40% of your time getting clients. That becomes the big bottleneck, is you need, so that's a full 2 days a week. But initially, when you're starting out, it needs to be 5 days a week because you don't have any business yet. But even when you're on the go and starting, business is starting to coming in, this is what happens. People say, okay, good, I've got some business now. I need to focus on keeping my customers happy and do a good job. So I'm going to really focus on them to make sure they're happy. Great. You do the work. It finishes. So you're not so busy anymore. You send the invoice, but then you've got nothing else coming in, and you can spend 2, 3, 4 months with nothing. So it's like restarting. So you need to really focus that 40%. So 2 days a week, you are in front of clients. It doesn't mean posting some social media thing about how smart you are or something like that, and you shake hands with someone important. No, this is getting right in front of customers who have the authority and interest to sign your agreement and the purchase order. That is the job. That if you're not doing that, then you're not doing that key part of the job, and your business will be in severe risk. Okay.
I love that. We actually, with some of my program, we talk about the fast cash plan for a lot of people. It's a 7-step fast cash plan that works. And it's exactly what you said. It's step one, identify a group of people sharing a specific problem you can fix. Think in stereotypes. 2, find or create a product or service. 3, create a promotion describing it and its benefits. 4, run a test, reach out to 100 ideal prospects one-on-1 via phone, ideally face-to-face, worst case, real-time social chat. So a message that sits and they ping back and you have 12-hour lapses. It's not that. You got to be in a real chat session with this person. And you're asking, would you or anyone you know need help with problem, or would you or anyone you know like result? And then you analyze the results. And if results are good, go talk to another potential ideal client. But I love the breakdown that 40% of your, I think Gary Vee said something similar. I'm not a huge, I got respect for him. I don't follow him a lot, but I heard once he said, everybody needs to put out 10 times more content, but 80% of their focus needs to be on driving new business. Yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. I love that.
But making that switch is not obvious for people from a corporate world, but if once it, they need some time to adjust, is what I've noticed. And I was the same.
And looking at where you started and where you are now, has the company changed dramatically? Have your objectives changed dramatically, or are you still focused on primarily the same pillars?
We initially focused on executive search because that's where I came from. And I really enjoy meeting people and learning about what they do and all of that. We started doing events on the side, partly, well, for 2 reasons. One, because we thought when you're meeting with clients and you want to be able to say that you're active in the business community and you know people a bit. And when you're hosting events and they're speaking at your events, it's an easy thing to say. The second reason was Philippines was not being promoted very well, or I should say it was being promoted, but only as a bad place to do business years ago when we started. It was just the news was one negative story after another. And I don't know, years ago, there used to be regular coup attempts in Philippines and government walkouts and corruption scandals and all this kind of stuff. And so it was a hard sell. But when I've met so many of the people, the expatriates coming to the country, setting up operations, initially, for instance, the early days of the call center business. And I would be, okay, a little story for you. When they first started to come, the only people you could get, guys, they were mainly guys, because no woman would in her right mind come to a dangerous place like Philippines. And they're often guys from places like Wyoming or New Brunswick or play lower middle manager types who didn't know where anything about Philippines. They would come and then they would arrive as nobodies. And within 6 months, a year, They would have 500 people reporting to them, 1,000 people reporting to them. And the results were so good. The Filipinos were delivering tremendously good results. Soon, it's the CEO that they're talking to, because Philippines has become the, you know, for profitability and for growth, and everything becomes Philippines. And so, so many times I'd be in their offices where the guys would be almost in tears. And sometimes they would be in tears because, oh, Richard, you know, what this, you know, these Filipinos, they work so hard and it meant everything to me in my life. And my life has changed because of Filipino, all this kind of, to the point where I could almost just record it and play it back because I heard it so many times. So I knew something big was going to happen. And there's such high quality people here that, you know, something big was going to happen, but we needed to do a better job of promoting it. Something that is, you know, Filipinos are very sweet and wonderful, adore them, everybody does, but they're not comfortable, you know, pounding their fist on the table saying, yes, Filipinos are hard workers and we're smart and we will work, you know, and you should start your business. They don't do that. They just,
they're very timid,
humble and timid, or, and don't, just don't feel comfortable mouthing off about how great they are. Now, if you go to other countries, China, the US, whatever, they're very comfortable, right? They'll tell you, yes, India, US, we are the best and we work hard and we're so smart and you should set up your business. But so this was the issue. So we just felt that we could assist. And the purpose of our events is to own, we're biased. So we only show the positive stories. And we, the idea is to get expatriates and Filipinos up on stage arm in arm with the message that if they can do it, you can too, is the kind of a background. So the event side took off on a life of its own. We just happened to hit when the economy and the government, to their great credit, really turned themselves around and really became focused on making Philippines a business destination. And so our events have followed along with that. Here, I'm talking too much. Go ahead.
That's why you're brought here. That's because that's, so I've talked about this. That's part of why I'm based in the Philippines. We're both Canadian and we're both based in the Philippines. And I feel like this is going to be the, we talked about this at the conference that we were just at together, the second time that we managed to meet up, that the Philippines is on an upward trajectory. Countries, they have populations decline. They have to import people to maintain like population numbers, which causes people will assimilate, but there's going to be friction. Whereas the Philippines, again, they can work with almost any time zone. Countries all over the world are outsourcing people here. So they're getting world-class training from around the world. Culturally, they're a very amicable culture. You know, the English is really good. I'm grow food here 12 months a year. The cost of living is reasonable. It's still a good place to have kids. You can actually afford to have kids and multiple kids if you want. And it's not going to cost a couple of generations to raise them. We're both on the same page for that. What do you think have been some of the best things about the Philippines that fewest people knew or know, even still?
It's surprising how many people don't know very much about Philippines, even now. A friend of ours, one of our sponsors, he's got a growing business. He went to Silicon Valley a few months ago, met with a pretty with it people there talking about Philippines and how they can help. He can help them with their business over. And the two questions he got, the first one was, do people speak English in Philippines? Right. This was, yeah. Can you imagine? So many people don't know about it. And the other thing is it dangerous? Am I going to get murdered? And you know, this kind of a questions. And he was just surprised. He's an American guy himself and believes in the big Philippine story, of course. But there's many in the world don't know about it and don't know. India seems to do a better job promoting themselves as a destination for IT work in particular. Philippines needs to, we can just do better than that. Yep.
And so with your Asia CEO events, you've being a Canadian doing here, can you maybe speak to doing business internationally, doing business across borders, doing business around Asia? I think we look at Asia, it's something like 60%+ of the world population. If you include Nigeria, the trajectory, it's going to be 80% of the world population pretty soon. But there's a lot of different cultures here. And there's a lot of different like there's a lot, yeah, a lot of different business cultures to it. Can you speak to that a little bit? If someone here is listening and they are trying to do business in Asia or across Asia, what's your experience for that?
It's a broad. Yeah, okay. That's a pretty broad. There is differences. This is something that, yeah, that's true. It does hit any new person here, whether you go to Germany or the US to the first time or wherever, right. There's going to be a culture shock and there's different ways of doing business. And that's true in Philippines. I think it is less different here. And because, yeah, it's more affordable to do business, you've got a longer period to make mistakes and learn. If you go to Germany or the US, you've got one shot. Yeah. And if you screw that up, you're out of money and you're out of business. Yeah. Here, you could screw up four or five times and still, okay, I can still keep going, right?
Yeah.
You know, some of the administration things, you'll spend a bit more time setting up your business, maybe sometimes even a bit more than a bit, getting the legal and accounting thing set up as well. But otherwise it's not that hard because you can move into a shared office space to start. Lots of regular office spaces available, and hiring people is a lot easier. And again, you can hire people. If you make mistakes, it's the...
Yeah, you're not to figure out that you hired the wrong person. Is there a different kind of specializations, would you say? For example, if a company is somewhere in the West or Australia or something, and they're trying to get a lot of what we're talking about here, we're talking about hiring and that and running the business. In terms of the market, is it, depending on what you're selling, if you're selling consumer goods or B2B services, is it better to maybe start in Singapore or is Indonesia the hot? You've really got boots on the ground.
Good question. A lot of people talk about Singapore. And my belief, talking to regional managers, is Singapore has no future. This is one of the most expensive places in the world to do business. And okay, it's interesting. When you talk to CEOs who are employees of companies as opposed to owners, they will say, oh, yes, Singapore is our regional office because our global headquarters mandates that we have to have this presence there and so forth. And why? I don't know now. But when you talk to CEOs who are owners of the companies, what they say, I remember different times we've had people. I remember there's this one guy a few years ago who won the expat executive of the year. He ran a regional operation. He initially did what everyone said. You set up your regional office in Singapore. And he said, what a bunch of overrated, underworked, overpaid morons. And he said, he was running, it was a 24 hour a day business. And it was actually, yeah, it was well known to be like it's open 24 hours. So he would hire a country manager. And then there'd be these problems naturally because it was a new thing, new setups and stuff like that. And then she would say to him, now, Robert, you need to stop calling me after my business hours because I need quality time with my family. And now that may be a valid thing to say for her, but it's not a valid thing to say to an entrepreneur who's got everything.
And if your invested business, in this part thing. Of your USP is we're open 24.
And the business is known as a 24 hour a day operation. Yeah. What do you talk? So he would get rid of that one and get another one. And they're just as self-entitled. Mm-hmm. So it's the most expensive place pretty much on the planet to do business. What is the market there? It is a tiny speck of real estate with a tiny aging population. There is no future there. Whereas the real growth, and so that particular fellow I just mentioned, he ended up setting up his moving his operation to Philippines, where it was easy to hire people. Oh yeah, I need you to fly over to Malaysia to help them with their operation. Sure, okay, in the following days in Indonesia or whatever. It was easy and it really made a big impact on his operation. So we're in that process where they still may have an entity in Singapore for show, but a regional manager spends most of his time on the plane anywhere and can be located anywhere. But the bulk of the workers are going to be in Philippines, Malaysia, and countries like that where they speak an international English and have sensible working hours and a sense of their sense of entitlement isn't through the roof, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of the first world, regardless if it's the West or not, I heard this saying, you can't keep wealth past three generations. The first one struggles and earns it. The second one witnessed their parents struggle, respects the grind, preserves it. And the third generation knows nothing but luxury, is so detached from the habits and behaviors that created it and squanders it. And I feel that's what's happening. If this is my personal opinion, but I feel like if arguing about pronouns is the biggest issue in your life, you just need better goals and have no idea what life is really about. If that's the biggest item on your table, I don't care if you're purple. I believe in a meritocracy, and like, I don't care your gender. I don't care your skin color. I'm about a meritocracy at the end of the day, working to get results. Now, in talking about setting up offices, it's one thing, but what about doing business? And whether you're B2C or even B2B, can countries like the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, I think part of what pulls people to Singapore is they think that I can charge my prices in Singapore. Whereas, can I charge those prices in other countries? Can I charge those in Indonesia and Vietnam and Philippines? What do you...
You cannot charge those things. You need to come down and think of the longer term. Now, what I have seen that has done very well is Philippines as a market for as a training ground. So for instance, we're working with a sizable IT operation here who does work with large financial institutions, the big global companies. So they receive good revenue from them and want to do a good job. But it was hard to move from hire people here who work for a local company and then expect them to perform at global levels. A big success that they've had and others is do business with the local banks, telcos, insurance companies, because they are each year improving themselves and they're on track to be world-class. There's a ways to go yet, but it's a superb training ground for your people. You can hire people right out of school, get them working for the local companies. You're still, charging a little margin, not much, but it's a fantastic training ground. Then when you have, it's a good place to have your bench, so to speak. And then when you have real international clients, you've got people that are ready to go and trained up that you can present. So this happens over and over again. Many of the BPO providers, they've also doing this, some better than others. But a number of the big international IT companies are now getting a local business that they didn't get before. They're not charging what they would charge in Singapore or Australia, but it's still, if they're doing offshore work for these more expensive locations here, they're starting to make some money and it really is, it works out.
Oh, I was muted. As you said, cash is important. As long as there's some margin, sometimes you just got to keep the staff busy and the cash flowing, so to speak. And also there's economies of scale. I think that's another part of this is terms of, especially with all these developments in AI and technology, I think places, depending on what it is that you're doing, where you have to also think about in terms of economies of scale. So I really like your position in terms of using it as a training. I think that's really good advice.
Sorry to interrupt here, Dale. The other thing, it depends on your business, but getting started and getting your position in the market, Philippines is on track, 2040, the economists say, to be a first world country or very close to it. So 15 years, or 2040, yeah. 16 years, actually.
Yeah.
Goes by quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are last in, if you wait until 10 years from now to start the work of entering, you're going to be behind every single one of your competitors and you're going to look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And the same goes for Indonesia and Vietnam. The other VIP, Vietnam, Indonesia, Philippines are the big three growth opportunities. Because they all have sizable population, young and high growth.
Oh,
Malaysia,
yeah.
Thailand, Singapore, those are aging and slowing economy, so they won't be a big future. But still, you want to be there.
Yeah, that's already is gold right there. Being able to say that Vietnam, Indonesia, Philippines are where the boom is, and Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore, there's opportunity there, but populations are in decline, and so not. Yep. I think that's huge. That's a huge. If you just combine the population of Vietnam, Indonesia, Philippines, that's the United States just right there, and there's three countries, but. Man, it's definitely a reachable phase. I agree wholeheartedly that the Philippines will be a first world country or close to it because, like we already said, this is one of the only places on the planet that still has a positive birth rate. When people get older, they don't spend more money. They're not building additions for the new kids and buying a bigger vehicle and planning family vacations, and their grocery bills are growing. There's not a lot of growth where there's no people. This whole zero growth economy nonsense is like a death cult, anti-human philosophy. Where it just is. There's no growth where there's no people. How many people are knocking doors in senior citizens' homes to grow their business? There's just not a lot of new businesses launching around senior citizens' care centers, unless it's keeping them alive. It's a really limited number of industries that are reaching there. There's no volleyball and ballet lessons. So I think that's a really good. So let me ask now about some of the CEOs. Having run these events and forums, can you speak to some of the habits that you've seen amongst the most successful? Are there any habits or even personality traits in that you feel are common denominators?
Yeah, they work hard. No surprise there. But there is people who, I was speaking with a guy just the other day. He had a big regional operation previously, head of the Asia region. I think he had 25,000 people in Philippines. And in other countries. But anyway, he's setting up his own business now and getting some traction with that, making some progress. But he's finding younger people, not all, certainly, but some are,
dainty. They're what?
Yeah, dainty. Like the further up, like he was being accused by one of his employees who was somewhat seen, 30-year-old person. And she was accusing him of being mean. This was what, and he said, I'm just, things have to get done. And apparently things were taking too long and commitments that she had made weren't falling through. But he said, I was only on my own mean scale out of 10. I thought I was about 4 or 5, but she thought I was much higher. And this sort of stuff. And he, despite being a very active LGBTQ community, part of that community himself, even he has trouble remembering all the pronouns.
Right.
And God help you if you forget someone's pronoun and or say it improperly and a scene is created. Meanwhile, we've got a business to run
right. That
is draining his, money every day and their job if it wasn't, and we're talking about pronouns. So what his statement was, the further up you go, the more unpleasant things can be because you are responsible. The buck stops here, this old saying. And people expect you to be almost godlike in your ability to solve their problems. And how are people going to move up? So he was concerned that for their careers, if this is their focus, how can I move them up? Because he needs to promote people to handle others and to grow the organization. How can he hire people who aren't thinking about their customers and deliverables and everything, and they're focused on these issues when there's much bigger ones to that where there's a lot more at stake?
Yeah, I agree. I tell my daughter all the time, she's 5, she's going to be 6, but I tell her that not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things just attach to you and feed on parasite. And that's what I think is happening in a lot of different work cultures where, Elon Musk calls it the woke mind virus, but there's ideologies, philosophies that get attached that maybe have a place after hours, sitting with your friends, discussing stuff like you would any hobby that you're into. But in the world of delivering results to people who have their wallets out, it's like in the middle of a soccer game trying to stop scoring goals because someone got like misidentified. This is what people don't realize. And this is, again, it's coming back to the whole One of my favorite quotes, my daughter knows this as well. Every morning in Africa, when the sun comes up, a lion wakes up and it knows it must outrun the slowest gazelle or it will starve. Every morning in Africa, a gazelle wakes up and it knows it must outrun the fastest lion or it will be killed. And the moral of the story is it doesn't matter if you are a lion or a gazelle or a he or a she. When the sun comes up, you better be running. And that's, I think, what you're talking about. And in some ways, I think it's a major, it's a glaring, it's a self-evident omission of the failing of our education systems in that sort of respect. Because it's not, people already complain, I graduated, you know, school and I didn't learn how to balance my checkbook or do my taxes or some of the things that, you know, are real life skills that I need to be a fully functioning human. But I learned how to rubber stamp this form really well. And I think this is one of those things where you're talking about, and that's a real issue. It's going to be a real issue. People talk about, so I'm going to shut up because I'm on a rant too, but people talk about like socioeconomic gaps, but there's also just going to be like mental competence. What is your mental fortitude? Like the universe doesn't care about a lot of this stuff. The lion that's chasing you for dinner is not going to stop and go, oh, I'm sorry, are your feelings hurt today? And people have just forgotten them because we're outside of we're the apex predators. We're outside of the food chain. Yeah. But there are still
taking response. You asked your question about CEOs. So taking responsibility, this is, you are responsible for looking after customers who are paying everybody's wages. And everything is dependent on that. And I could go in more detail, but that's...
No, I think that's a huge... And it's also, I think, an attitude of self-reliance. Like we did a bunch of research. I'll talk about that another... No, maybe talk here. I spent 50 grand to go into research, look at through all the academic papers on business success. And we identified 8 critical success factors for small and medium-sized businesses. And they were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skill, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. That those umbrella categories encapsulated a lot. And people always ask me, Daryl, what's the one that rules them all? And it almost comes to what you just spoke to. It's self-efficacy, which we defined because we drilled into each one then on its own. Self-efficacy is your ability to get things done via yourself and others. It's certain personality traits, leadership skills, and personal disciplines. The personality traits, locus of control. That means taking responsibility, taking control of what you can control. Extroversion. You got, like you said earlier in the call, you got to go out there and be with the clients. Sorry, you got to meet them, right? Openness to experience. That's another one that you have to have. Same thing. You have to be agreeable to a certain extent because you have to cooperate with your customers, your vendors, and your team. You have to be conscientious of other people. And you have to be accepting criticism and feedback. Otherwise, you know, how many people run their business off a cliff because they won't listen to anybody? I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. Where do you see things 5-10 years from now? You spoke a little bit about the Philippines. It might be a top one country, but with all these geopolitical issues and all these technological issues that are coming out, being that you bring industries of leaders together, what trends are you watching over the next 5-10 years?
Okay. The main trend I'm watching is focused on this country in Philippines, because I just find it so utterly fascinating and exciting that seeing the trends, I've seen what I've seen over the past 20 years. When I came here 20 years ago, it was a very poor country, Daryl. There was, I remember downtown Makati, which is the central business district, walking a long time just to find a dirty little convenience store. There was so little, there was only a few restaurants in the whole city, the whole country, that was someplace you could take an international guest and they would be comfortable. Now, of course, BGC, you just walk around and there's hundreds of beautiful places that anybody from any country would be beautiful. If you extrapolate that over the next 20 years and the country hits this, I can go through why we often have these economists speak, and I can go through and make a strong case for why Philippines will, I'm not just saying this emotionally because I want it, but Philippines will become a first world country. Let me just go through that quickly because I've done it a couple of times and people like the story. But growing at about 7%, it's a bit 6-7%, things double every 10 years. So you plug it into any calculator, 7% growth rate per year, you double in 10 years. Today, Philippines is right on the edge of hitting what they call upper middle income status, which is about $4,000 US per capita income. So it will hit that very soon. Some say in the next couple of quarters, others say next year. Now that's inflate. I think with inflation, it might be 4,600, 4,800, something like that, but it's around, I'll just use 4,000 because it's inflation adjusted. So in 10 years, it will double to $8,000 per capita income. Okay. And then another 10 years after that, if it keeps going, and it should, according to the Lewis transition model. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but so if it goes and another 10 years, and it sure as hell should, that will mean $16,000 per capita income. $12,000 is the cutoff. Above that, you are first world. So 16, it should be, that's why they say 2040, it'll either be over the line or close enough to it to say, we're almost there, thing, right?
I love that.
Arthur Lewis was the guy who came up with this model, now called the Lewis transition model. Won the Nobel Prize for it. He was quite a good story and an interesting guy. Black guy from the Caribbean. Like when I looked him up, I expected to see a stuffy old white guy. He was a stuffy old black guy. Came from one of the little Caribbean countries. I think it was Antigua or something like that, that has a backwater. Obviously a brilliant guy. He was later knighted. In Britain, you would call him Sir Arthur Lewis, also known as the father of developmental economics, which is the economics of how developing countries become first world. And he worked out this model, which maybe I shouldn't go into because I'll lose some people, but it's fascinating. And Philippines is on that. So there's two big issues that Filipinos and international people always say that, Richard, Philippines will never be a first world country because, one, education. Philippines is bottom of the thing for education. And the other thing, especially Filipinos talk about, is corruption.
Right.
Now, this model says, no, it doesn't. These things would help. It would help, certainly, if we had better education. It would help if corruption levels were lower. It's not a showstopper. If you look at Korea is still a corrupt country, was much more corrupt than I think Philippines is now, but it made first world status. So it's not a showstopper. And education is not. There's a big movement of people during this period, just like we had in China, and from the rural areas to the city. So what happens when you move someone from a small town who's, let's say he's a planter of rice, or he looks after some carabao, let's say he earns 3,000 or 4,000 pesos a month, just moving that person to the city, right? From the small town to the city, let's say he's going to be a tricycle driver or auto body repair or a caretaker or something like that. He'll typically triple his income. Mm-hmm. So 10 to 12,000 pesos, just moving them from, again, the town, the small village to the city. They don't require any special training, education, anything like that. And they triple their income. Now you might say that, well, but Richard, 12,000 pesos, that's not a lot of money. But if you do that 30 million times, 40 million times, which is what we're talking about for Philippines, you dramatically increase the overall productivity and income of the nation. Because within that 30 million, there will be some who do get extra education training and they increase their income much more. Others will start businesses that will grow and some will be successful. And so for that whole...
Education thing, I think the internet has been a major disruptor to that to a certain extent. Because before it was like the church in the dark ages where they were the only ones with the books and they could read them. And if you only could afford to pay first world university fees, could you access this knowledge? But now anybody with an internet connection can learn from people in the trenches. YouTube is a phenomenal
good point
itself.
Yep.
And I actually met a gentleman here. We almost did some business together, Momo. I forget his last name, but he's basically out to give free internet to the Philippines. Basically a basic daily quota of internet. And people can upgrade if they want. He's working with a lot of LGUs, local government units, to help fund this. Basically, they pay for the infrastructure. He gives the internet away for free. and the people who upgrade themselves. And there were stories he was telling me, like a boy who would catch snakes and frogs, and he would sell them. And this family, like you mentioned, was only doing something like 3,000 pesos a month or something like that, like $90 US a month. But then they got access to free internet and they could post in Facebook groups. And now he's doing 15 to 30,000 pesos a month, frogs and snakes, the skins, to people that make wallets out of them and all sorts of other stuff. I think, and another thing to that, I got in an argument with a guy here because he talked about how Filipinos have one of the lowest IQ scores. And he talked about being the major determinant of like success in life. And I was like, no, and IQ is important 100%, but there's different types of intelligence. We've already learned that. And it's funny because he's an American and I'm like, in America, do they use bidets? And he goes, no, not really. And I'm like, you just smear your ass with toilet paper and walk around with skid marks on your underwear. So you're trying to hold this, like, if your IQ is so great, how come this dumb Filipino figured out I should use some water to actually clean my butt versus there's just so many holes in that argument that your IQ determines your outcome. I got so mad at him for that. Yes, it is helpful, but there's lots of people with high IQs that have no interpersonal skills and therefore are like, they're recluses. They're too smart for the world, so to speak. So it's a dynamic thing. Anyways, to speak to that, I think, yeah.
It can be overrated, the need for it. If you look at, when I came here, the largest business group was the Ayala Corp, right? And at the top was Jaime August and the other, and they all had fantastic educational pedigrees. The most expensive, Harvard MBAs and, I don't know, Princeton, whatever is the most expensive luxury branded education they had. And they're brilliant people. They look good. They talk all the right words. And you know that they, what they're doing. Now, since then, Henry C., he had a group called the SM group. He quit school when he was, I think, in grade 7 or 8. He worked at his parents' hardware store in Divisoria, the Chinese trading area. His group overtook and buried the Ayala group. If you look at the charts now, it is Henry C., not even a high school dropout. He didn't go to high school, as far as I understand. And then below that, I think you have Vilar, who's also has about his same level of education as Henry C., also done very well. Go Kong Wei. It just seems like in a fast-growing emerging economy like Philippines, luxury branded educations don't, it's more because it's
result.
Yes. And more what they're doing is implementing what is already existing in other countries in this country. That you don't have to create from scratch or innovate or anything like that. It's just implementing it, what it's already done and proven, right?
Right.
So the top education of the top schools and all that, it doesn't, you know, if you were in the US or some advanced country like that, yes, because maybe. You have to be,
maybe.
But maybe, and that's a good word, maybe is the right word. But again, the whole thing has been turned upside down where the ones with the best education haven't done as well as the ones who just came from nowhere and worked their behinds off.
We're sold an identity. And they were sold an identity and Kool-Aid. Anyways, I don't want to throw shade on anyone, but the results
for themselves, nor do I.
The fact that right now we're having all these campuses having protests against the institutions that have indoctrinated them is just the bittersweet irony. What are some of the biggest mistakes people make then when they try to come and do business in the Philippines? You mentioned one, you can't charge what you charge outside. That was one. You mentioned another one. Where was that? I got 2 pages of notes. Anyways, what are some of the biggest mistakes you're making when they come and try to do business in the Philippines?
Yeah, they don't acclimatize to the local environment. Some I have seen say, I'll pick on Germans. Not that they're, I think German companies have done very well, but I remember there was a couple that, and others too, Americans, Canadians, there's always some who feel that, well, we are a, again, I'll pick on a German, We are a German company, so we do things the German way, which is the best way, because we're the top in our field or whatever. And it's our way that this is how it will be done. And so then when they deal with some issue where it doesn't work. Their senior people leave them. Their customers don't want to be, it just does not work. Or they deal with some little corruption issue and then they flip out and create a big thing about it. And it's a disaster. So you have to really get to know the local environment and how to, and alter or adapt to it. So that is.
Know your market. Know your market.
Know your market. Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I guess
this isn't Germany. It's not the US or Canada. This is the Philippines, a unique people. And they wanted to be acknowledged for their differences. They know that you have things to share and they want to know that, but they don't want to be treated in a condescending manner or.
Yeah. Patronizing.
Manner. They don't. Patriarchy. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's.
Okay.
That's,
another thing, it's going to take longer to get going. It's not like setting up a branch office in another city in the US and then you're in business the next day. I know Filipinos especially are very, they see so many companies come in and then give up and leave. They want to see that you're going to be around for a while before they'll start to sign on for you. When I first came, I was told, Richard, focus on the international customers. Don't waste your time with Filipino companies because they're just a waste of time. They can't pay or they can't pay very much and they'll just waste your time. So forget it. And I thought, gee, that's not a very positive thing to say. Now, in the short term, he was right, because Filipinos, naturally, they don't know whether you're going to be around for 6 months, right? They want to know that you're committed to. You commit to that. You get yourself established. And then slowly, most of your business becomes Filipino business. Most of our business, they will become your friends. And then they want to work with you for the long term. So while the international customers, every new expat or whatever comes in, or regional person that sticks their nose into the business here, wants to renegotiate and drive you freaking crazy, and you have to, so it comes and goes. But the Filipino companies, once they know you and they know that you're on their side, they'll stick with you.
Yep.
And boy, we've become more of a, so most of our business is with Filipino companies, and we really want to make them shine because we respect them and appreciate what they do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing. It's almost the opposite of the instant gratification.
It is opposite. It's
the opposite. Like family ties here are still really deep. That's part of where the country comes from. It's not even malicious. It's that everyone here has massive families. And the ties are deep. The ties are really deep. And so it's an opportunity and a weakness at the same time.
Yes, it is. It's an opportunity and a weakness. I think it is. I hope they can maintain their family bonds and friendships and so forth. I think in the West, and I understand Japan, other places, they're losing these. We're all losing our family structures and strong friendships, and to our detriment.
Yeah, I think,
but it's a balance. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that time will tell. I think as we see the wave of baby boomers who are alone and dying alone in hospital beds with no one around them, I think that's going to be a real lesson for a lot of people.
Oh, it's just true.
We have small attention spans and short memories, but I'm pretty sure the cycles will pivot and change hopefully at some point. We need to, as a species, I think, as the population. Yeah. Collapse accelerates. I think people are going to appreciate that even more, or even any sort of hardship, whether it's war or economic, any sort of hardship, whether it's just solar flares from the sun. I think that those sorts of things will really start to forge those bonds again.
Yeah, great.
This has been a great interview. I do want to be respectful of your time. I've got a couple pages of notes here. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Good question. Did I give you my little speech about Philippines? I guess I did. But it really is, I want people to know that it really is a special time. And I'm just so mind boggled when you speak to international people and they say, Richard, Philippines is one of the big growth opportunities of the planet. And they're so excited about it. But yet I speak to too often Filipinos in particular. You see these surveys of young Filipino university graduates who their greatest goal is to leave the country. Yeah. This is their, what they envision as success is to leave the country. And I just can't believe it. So we need to, there's both a promotional opportunity, let's call it, both within Philippines and outside Philippines, because we are entering a golden age here where this country is going to be transformed from a place where most people think is poor to one that it becomes a real opportunity. And because it is still has a population growth rate that is positive, it will continue. Other countries we worry about, Vietnam, their growth rate has dropped below that 2.1 babies. India, I was at a presentation. There's an association here called IBPAP, which represents the major business process outsourcing and shared services companies. A big event with a large number of people. One of the guys, a McKinsey guy from the U.S. that they flew over, he pulled up the population growth charts of Philippines, India, I think Costa Rica, some other ones. And the only one that had the traditional pyramid shape where you have the most number of babies between 0 and 1 and 10 years to 20 years and as was Philippines. All of the other ones, including India, I was so shocked, that's already starting to invert. Japan, China, Korea, these over, they have severely inverted population charts or demographic charts, they call it. That's why their economies are collapsing. And they're having such a, I don't know if you talk to, you do talk to people there, but it's a crisis situation and not going to get any better. Philippines is one of the rare ones that can continue to grow at least 20 years. It seems even longer than that, 25, maybe even 30, because there's still young population coming into the workforce and in larger and larger numbers. In China, it is reversed. So each year there's fewer and fewer numbers of people entering the workforce and as their workforce ages. So this is the Goldilocks period, what they call, for the country. So we want people to recognize the opportunity that is here and be part of it. And especially where there's still people who talk about China as if they're going to take over from the US as the world. No, they are never going to do that. They are demographically, they're going to lose close to a third of their population, according to demographers, by the middle of the century. Yep. That's bad enough. Sorry, I'm on a rant here. But 40% of the people remaining will be aged people who are going to need pensions, people who are going to need health care and other support. And where is this going to come from? It's just a mind-boggling, worrying situation. So China will not. And in addition, they have a nasty habit of picking fights with all of their customers, neighbors. And so I don't know. They're not going to rule the world. They are blowing their brains out.
Yeah. And in Vietnam, when I lived there, I spent 2.5 years in Vietnam, is taking a huge bite out of their manufacturing industry out of China.
They are
running
correct
from China.
As is Mexico, as is Thailand, as is how many other countries. So they are, China is going to be in a hard time. I wish them well. Who doesn't have respect for the Chinese people, how hard they work and the things that they have done? I think something like 600 million people were brought out of poverty into middle class and even higher income. So a tremendous achievement. Just they need to change some of their approaches more reasonably.
Yeah. Richard, if people want to learn more, if they want to get involved with Asia CEO Forum or they have questions for you, what are the best ways?
Sure. Come on. Send us some. I don't know. Our website is asia-ceo.org or asia-ceo.awards.org. And yeah, come along to any of our events. But the awards event is a pretty grand one. We fill the Marriott Grand Ballroom, which is the largest grand ballroom in the country, the only one that can hold the event. And it is the leaders of the nation. So companies typically buy tables for their senior, their most senior leaders. So we have just billionaires come to our events. I'm so touched that they do. So this is the place to meet people and see people. And the only place you're going to have everybody there in one shot, eating caviar and drinking champagne. So yeah, glad to have you if you're able. And yeah, Daryl, really appreciate the work you're doing here, and we wish you continued success. Seems like you're really on track with things.
Thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure. So go check out Asia CEO Awards. You can go to asia-ceo-awards.org or asia-ceo.org. Do a Google search if you need to. You can find him on LinkedIn. Just look up Richard Mills, M-I-L-S, or just search for Asia CEO Awards or Asia CEO Forum on LinkedIn. Richard, thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure. I know that you have your own following, your own staff, your own family to look after and take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with me and mine so we can all do a little bit better.
Pleasure. I hope, yeah, I can get people positive because it's really a big opportunity. And we need people to really want to build their lives and careers. We need lots.
So anyway, yeah. So thanks again, Daryl. Really a pleasure.